Give it here.
Okay, this week's Sedra, the Era. We have the beginning of Aliyah Revi. It says, V'yomer Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron le'emor. And Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron, saying, Ki yedaber aleichem paro le'emor, tnu lachem mofes, v'amarte al Aaron, kachet matcha v'ashlech lifnei paro v'yilasanin. So the literal translation, which as we'll see is difficult over here, it says that when Paro will say to you, Tnu lachem mofes, give for yourselves a wonder, you'll tell Aaron to take his stick and throw it down, it'll turn into a serpent, etc. So the difficulty is, of course, the words, Tnu lachem mofes. They said, when Paro is going to say to you, make for yourselves a wonder, that's not what Paro is going to say. He's not going to say to Moshe and Aaron, make for yourselves a wonder. What is he going to say? Make for me a wonder. Make for us a wonder. He's going to say, right, Paro's going to say to Moshe and Aaron, make for me a wonder. Come on, you think you're so great, you know, do a wondrous thing for me. Show me a wonder, right? Not tnu lachem mofes, make for yourselves. What? Aaron and Moshe, go make for yourselves a wonder. It doesn't make any sense. It's a famous question. The Rav Elimelech Milizinsk, he says one possible answer. He says that there's two types of tricks. Okay, a trick that a magician does, and a trick, quote unquote, that God does. A mofes, a wonder that God does. What's the difference? It says a trick that a person does, the only person that's surprised, or people that are surprised, is the ones that are listening or watching the thing. Okay? But the person doing it, he's not impressed. I mean, he's doing it. A magician does a trick. He's not, wow, I can't believe I just did this. Right? He knows what he's doing. Doesn't make an impression on him. It makes an impression on people watching. However, a wonder that Kosh Baruch Hu does through an individual makes an impression even on the person doing that, because he's himself surprised, right? Because it was done by Hashem. Memele, that's what Pharaoh was saying, he says. He says, make for yourselves a mofes, meaning, I don't want you to just do a magic trick that I'll be impressed, because, okay, big deal, you're a magician, right? You're claiming to be sent from God, so tnu lachem mofes, make a wonder, a miracle that you yourselves are going to be impressed by. Something, if you're claiming that it came from God. That's what really Amala said. I was thinking of a different pshat based on a different idea. It says way back in Parshas Vayishlach, when Yaakov Avinu was preparing for his meeting up with his brother Esav, so he sends these messengers or angels, right, to Esav with the gift. So it says in the pasuk that Yaakov's giving these angels instructions, exactly what to do, etc. And says in the psukim to take all these things, how to set up the camp, etc. When they approach, and when my brother Esav will meet up with you, and ask you, then he's going to ask, exactly who are you, where are you going, what are all these things? Again, here, the language is very difficult. It says, and you'll say, le'avdecha le'Yaakov, right, to Yaakov, your servant, it's a gift, you know, sent to Esav. Doesn't read. What do you mean, to? It should say, from. It should say, this is a gift from Yaakov, your servant. But it says, le means to. But this is a gift to Yaakov, your servant, okay, to you, Esav. What do you mean, to Yaakov? It should say, from, not to. So, so an explanation once that based on the Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara in Kedushin says, Nav Zayin, that says, normally, in order to make Kedushin happen, a man has to give something of value, at least a Shava Pruta, to a woman to make the Kedushin. However, there is a way where a woman could receive something, could give something, and be Mekudeshes. Normally she has to receive. What's how so? Says the Gemara. If the woman gives something to an Adam Chashev, she gives something to a very Chashev a person. So the fact that this person accepted the gift from her, that gives a tremendous amount of pleasure. It's like you give something to the, I don't know, president or something. He goes, oh, thank you, and he takes it and he wears it, a clip or whatever. So you're honored, right? That wow, he took this and he's wearing. So too, if a woman gives something to a chash of a person, the essence fact that he's accepting it gives her a tremendous amount of pleasure, and that itself she can be mikudesh with the pleasure that she's having received from somebody accepting her gift. So Mela, Yaakov was saying the same thing to the Malachim over here, right? He said he wanted to show Esav, you know, to subjugate, subdue himself, whatever, to Esav, and therefore he wanted to, you know, say, Esav, you're so great that even though this is a gift to you, but you're such a chash of a person to me, Esav, that when I'm going to give you this gift, as if I'm receiving something, I'm getting nachas, the fact that you're, it's like the woman giving to a chashev person, she's getting honored that somebody chashev is taking it. So too, if you take this gift, Esav, it's like I got something, right? Because you, this chashev person, Esav, took my gift. And therefore, that's why it says, le avdechali, it's a mincha, where, to who? To Yaakov, your servant. We said, no, it isn't, it's from Yaakov. No, it's to Yaakov, because if Esav receives it, it's like Yaakov receiving a gift. He's so happy that this chash of a person, at least that's what he's making it out to be, right? That he's chash of a person, he's accepted his gift, so it ends up being a gift to Yaakov. That's in the possible shot. Also, we find a similar lashon by Yisro. When Yisro offered sacrifices, it said, Vayikach Yisro chosen Moshe ola uzvachim. That he took ola uzvachim. So here too, it should have said, and he gave. You give a sacrifice, you give over a sacrifice, you don't take a sacrifice. So also over here, they say the same thing, that Yisro subjugated himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Memele, when he gave something to no greater one than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so if giving to a chashev person, it's as if you're receiving something, all the more so. If you give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the more so, it's like you're receiving something. And of course, we can use this to answer the famous question in the beginning of Parshas Truma. Right, so v'yikhu li truma, when it talks about giving donations to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, so it says over there also a funny lashon. V'yikhu li truma, right, Hashem says, take for me truma. It shouldn't say take for me, it should say give to me, not take. Same idea. Because giving to the Mishkan, giving to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's like taking, you're receiving. If giving to a chash of a person, kosher came to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's no greater feeling of, wow, look who took what I gave. So you get a tremendous, it's like you're taking when you're giving in such a situation. Okay, so too, I was thinking to say, answer over here as well, the Lashon over here in our Sedra. Right, we said, what's the idea when Paro said, right, when Paro's going to say to you, Tznu lachem mofei, so should have said, when Paro says, when he'll say to you, give me a wonder, not give yourselves. So it's the same thing, right? Paro felt himself as a god, right? He pretended to be a god, right? That's what the impression he gave to all of Egypt. So, and as a result, so he said, Tznu lachem mofeis, right? When you're going to do something and try to impress me, okay, if you will, you're really impressing yourself, because I'm such a chash of a person, I'm like God. So when you're giving to me, the God, it's like you're doing it for yourself, right? You're receiving yourself, like we said. You give the chash of a person, you give to God, it's like you're receiving yourself. So when therefore he said, when Pharaoh's going to use the lashon, nu lachem mofeis, do something for me, but it's going to be really you yourselves taking. So the truth is, even though we constantly are giving to Kodesh Baruch Hu, quote unquote giving to Kodesh Baruch Hu, but like we said, every time we really give to Kodesh Baruch Hu, we're really taking for ourselves. In other words, it's really for our own benefit. Sometimes we see it, sometimes we don't. So Maisa, about a woman that this woman was buried, she had no family, she died in the Ukraine. And she was, since she had no family, the authorities took her body and they buried her in the Christian cemetery. Okay, later on, 5 years later, after the burial, they realized the Jewish sources got word of what happened, that this was a Jewish woman, and she was buried in the Goyish cemetery. So it was a big tumult, and they pulled strings to have her body removed from there and to be buried elsewhere. So they got word of it here in Eretz Yisrael, in Be'er Yaakov, in the community in Be'er Yaakov, and they also put their efforts in to have the woman's body, whatever's left of it, whatever, to be flown over here to Eretz Yisrael, be buried over here in Be'er Yaakov. So they did so. They, opened the kever and took her body out. And when the Chevra Kedisha over here received the body, they went into shock. Why? They saw the body was 100% intact after being 5 years in the kever. Not like 5 days, 5 years in the kever. Okay, it was completely not, the body was 100%, like it was just as it was just buried. So, they did the burial, etc. And then they wanted to look in, like, who was this woman? You know, like, what kind of a tzedekis? They don't rot in the kever. Like, well, who was this woman, you know? So they did a little bit of, investigation. And what did they find out? That this woman was a woman that was very ill. And when she was 17 years old, she went into a coma. And she didn't go out of the coma until she died. She woke up, and when she was 90 years plus, okay, over 90, she woke up and died, and that was it. So her whole life, from age 17 till 90, she was in a coma, okay, which is like a 73 years plus. And that's who this woman was. So they brought this information to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and they said, like, what's pshat over here? I mean, you know, what's the tzedekis? I mean, she was like in coma her whole life. Like, what's the, you know? So he said that this woman, you know why she was stayed intact? Because the pasuk say, and Chazal explained, it says, rekav atzmos kina, right? It says that what rots bones? Jealousy. Right? That's what the pasuk says. The Mela said, Rav Chaim, since this woman was in a coma her whole life, okay, kamat, so she didn't have a chance to be jealous. Mamelis, and jealousy rots the bones, and she was never jealous because she was in a coma, nothing not functioning. So Mamelis, her body didn't rot because she was never jealous. So here's an idea. We said that you think, I'm giving the Kodesh Baruch Hu, okay, I'm not going to be jealous, Hashem, look what I'm doing for you. But Lamaisa, you're doing it for yourself in the end. It's another Maisa that was about 60 years ago. There was a couple in Yerushalayim, and Lo Aleinu had terrible tsaras that is later on became a known sickness problem. But their children, they had a child, and a few days later after the birth, the child was nifter. They had another child, same thing happened. Another child, same thing. They had four or five kids, and every single one was nifter after a few days. And it's something like it. So they at that time they didn't know what it was and it's for sure here. But there was happened to be a doctor, American doctor, was visiting Israel at the time, and he heard about the family's plight, and he looked into it, and he met with them and asked about their history, etc. And he came to the conclusion, which nowadays is a known thing, is that when this happens, that the baby has to have immediately upon birth a blood transfusion. Right? She has to drain the blood and put new blood in, and then that's all. Then the kid will be fine. I happen to know somebody who had this and it was done to, and that's nowadays a known thing. So they said, okay, the only thing is that the baby has to be born first, if there is a baby, and then find out what the blood type is, and then find somebody that's willing to give the blood, and there's certainly a lot of blood. Anyway, so sure enough, the couple had another child, and immediately went into action, searching around for somebody to give the blood. So they found it was a boy. And this baby boy, and they found, sure enough, this was a Rav. His name was Rav Bradwin, and Pinchas Bradwin. And he had the same blood type, and he said he's prepared to give his blood. And sure enough, they gave this boy, a baby boy, a blood transfusion, and the boy lived, and everything was fine. So what's the what's special about the story? Special about the story is the end. And what was the end? That it ended up that this boy grew up and ended up marrying this Rav Brandwin's daughter. So, point being, that again, right here, he thought he was giving, you know, his blood and giving him, giving of himself. Meanwhile, he bought himself a son-in-law. Okay, we think we're giving, but in the end, we're really receiving for ourselves. It's going to conclude with another very amazing story. It's on this book, There's No Such Thing as Coincidence. And it calls the following true story. There was a fellow who was living in London, and he had a chasna to go to in New York. So he made sure early in advance to book his ticket, whatever, because he was busy. And he decided the chasna was on the Thursday night, so he had a flight like Thursday morning, first thing in the morning, to be there, you know, plenty of time for the chasna Thursday night. So what happens, he recalls, he said he, that same week, we were supposed to fly on Thursday morning, like on Monday, his back was very, very sore. And a friend of his encouraged him to go to the hospital to check it out. So they went, they said it was a slip disc, and they said, they did a procedure, whatever, and sure enough it worked, and he was feeling better. But while he was in the hospital, for a day, overnight, or whatever. So the next day, he was ready to check out, and this elderly Rav comes in and greets him. He says, "Oh, hello." So it was a Rav from Mishul. So he says, "Oh, I came to visit you." So this fellow was a little bit embarrassed. "Oh, visit me? I'm not, a major sick person. I had a little slip disc, and I'm about to check out." But he said, "Okay, it's nice of you to visit me." Okay, so schmoozing about this and that, and then they got onto the topic of this chasna. He goes, "I understand you're going to a chasna." He says, "When's the chasna?" He said, "Yeah, Thursday night." "When are you flying?" He says, "Thursday morning." So the Rav said, "Thursday morning? Isn't that a little bit, Thursday morning, and you get there, and it's exhausting, it's a nice, flight. And how are you going to dance, besimcha at the wedding after arriving the same day as the wedding?" He says, why don't you fly on Wednesday? The day before, you have a day to rest up, for the wedding." So he says, "I don't know." I was like, "Okay, didn't think too much of it." And fine, that was the end of the visit. So I thought, should I change my flight? I mean, what? He said, "I don't know." The fact that he made a point of asking me to change it, maybe I'll see what I can do. So he called the travel agent. Sure enough, there was an available seat on the day before on Wednesday. And he flew on Wednesday to New York. What happens? Thursday morning, what's the talk of the town? The Pan American flight that flew from London to New York and crashed. And that was the flight that he was supposed to be on. So he was, of course, in shock, and he said, "I danced at that chasna like I never danced before. I was like, Tchias Amesim." He was mamish. It wasn't for this Rav that. And later he found out that the Rav himself didn't understand why he told him to fly earlier. He said, "I don't know why I got this crazy thing in my head to tell him to fly earlier, Something made him say it, and he was makabalit, which was also, and they happened to have a flight open. It was all mina shamayim, and then Mamash saved his life. Anyways, he came back, he called immediately the Rav and said, "Thank you so much, you saved my life," and this. And he said, I told him, "I don't even know why I said it to you, but okay, it was meant to be," and that was that. So he came back from New York, back to London, and then this Rav calls him up and says, "I'd like you to come over, I want to tell you something." That's okay, I don't know what it's all about. And he goes over, and he sits him down. Rav sits him down. He says, "I'd like to tell you a story. A little thing," he said, "that happened to me during the war. I'm a survivor of the Holocaust. I'll tell you a little mice that happened to me." He says, "Okay." And didn't understand why the Rav wanted to tell him this, but fine. So he's listening. The Rav says, "I was a young man at the time of the war, and I was hiding in some attic, and I was learning Torah, 24 hours a day, and hiding away from the Nazis, Yimach Shemo. And across the hall, was a woman in an apartment across the hall, and her husband and older sons were all taken away from the Nazis by the Nazis, and she took it upon herself, knowing where I was and I was learning Torah, to help me, and she used to send food to me and thing and keep me, you know, to because I can survive. And any time there was emergency, whatever, she would call me, and I would hide, go and, you know, make sure I get in and make sure, you know, be quiet, whatever. So one day, he says, I was happened to be outside a little bit, getting some fresh air, and all of a sudden we hear thumping, you know, boots and rifles. That the Nazis are coming into the building, and I was in shock, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't have time to go into the attic. And sure enough, this woman, she calls me. She goes, quick, get over here. So I ran over to her apartment, and she says, quick, hide here. So I go into the apartment, and where am I going to hide? So where does she hide me? In the most ridiculous place in the world. Where? Behind the door. You know, it's like when you open the door, so like, just behind the door. That's it. Like, not under the bed, not in the closet, like, it's behind the door. You'll hear, I stand here. Sure enough, 2 minutes later, bam, 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 they're smashing at the door. And the Nazi is saying, open up! And then she's like, why? What do you want? She goes, there's somebody hiding out there. We want to know, we want you to, you know. She goes, no, there's nobody here. And they go away. He says, where? We want to, we're going to find them. Let us in. And smash open the door. And the door opens. And, you know, he says, I'm standing there. And the door is like right, you know, in front of me. And they're coming in. And they're saying, yeah, we're going to find them. And if the women, we find them, we're going to, you know. And she says, no, there's nobody here. And he says, where's your husband? He says, well, they took him when, and my son's already a while ago, and there's nobody here except me and my little ones. So he says, oh yeah, we don't believe you. And they're searching the house, this, that, they're taking apart the whole house. And he says, I'm standing there holding my breath, and I'm about to die. I can't believe it. I mean, all he needs is, you know, they move the door out there, I'm standing right there. And I'm schwitzing, and I'm trembling, and I thought this was it. And then they went up to the woman and said, listen, we know somebody's here, and if you don't tell us where he is, then and we find him, you're dead. So he said, oh, he assumed that that was the end. I mean, why should she give up her life for me? I mean, who was I, you know? And no reason, but she didn't. She stood by her thing and goes, no, there's nobody here. You can search all you want. You're not going to find anybody. She probably stood her ground. And I couldn't believe it. And I was bekoshi alive at this point out of fright. And there's again, they're looking here, there, and they didn't open the door. They were closed the door, right? They didn't move the door, and they stomped out of the apartment, and boom, and that was it. Closed the door, and I was, he said, like white, like chalk. You can imagine, I was such fright, and I said, I was so, you know, in shock. I didn't even have enough time to thank the woman. I just like went back to my hiding place. And Baruch Hashem, and that was a small incident, quote unquote, he said, but I don't know, I went through all kinds of nisim during the war, and Baruch Hashem, you can see I survived, and from what I hear, this woman also survived the war. Okay, so this person listening, and this man, you know, that survived the plane crash, so he is listening, he goes, okay, it's, you know, it's a very nice story, you know, but, you know, well, why are you telling me this, right? So he says, well, the reason why I'm telling you this is because this woman is your grandmother. So he was shocked. And he then understood, and as the Rebbe explained to him, now everything fell into place. You know, here you're wondering why I saved your life, and I didn't even understand why I saved your life. You know, it was in the schus of your grandmother because she saved my life, right? So again, same idea. Here's this woman. She was Moser Nefesh. You know, she was Moser Nefesh for this boy. Little did she know or realize that this mysterious Nefesh, that she was, almost giving up her life to save this Bachar, was really, in the end, saving her grandson. It was a Stama Bachar. And in the end, because of that, her grandson was saved from a plane crash. So here we have the same idea. As we said, we give, we think we give. But as we see, Vichuli Truma, that when we give, it's really we're taking. Especially when we give to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So we should keep on giving, and the more we give, the more we get. And if the Kodesh Baruch Hu sees us doing our efforts and realizing all the gifts that he gives us, he'll hopefully give us the greatest gift, the coming of the Mashiach Tzidkenu, Bimhera Bimeinu. Mm-hmm.